we own 100% of the history of North America, which is called the Craigmont Mine, which is where I'm at right now. Our mill is located at the Craigmont Mine site. And then we have a fully permitted silver mine called Treasure Mountain Silver Mine, which is 90 minutes from here. We have a fully permitted rock quarry, a fully permitted gravel pit, and we have a fully permitted cement plant. So, you know, everything we have is permitted, and this is going to be a great year for us.
Peter Espig, Nicola Mining, good afternoon to you. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
No, thank you. So I'm going to set this up with to all of our viewers and listeners. Steve and I have been going on for about 30 minutes off camera with Peter, and I wish we would have got that on camera. It was just pure golden. So we're going to try to catch everybody up to speed. Give us a 30,000-foot view of Nicola Mining, and then what we're going to do is just going to try to take it where we left off about 5 minutes ago. So fair enough.
Sure. I mean, we're a junior mining company. We are unique in that we provide shareholders with, you know, exposure to both precious metals and base metals. So I'm going to just lift up my camera here and walk you, and you can see I'm at the mill site right now because I'm pretty hands-on. I may look like prison bars, but it's not. It's just to, those bars are there to prevent the birds from flying into the windows. So we produce gold and silver concentrate. We own a history of North America, which is called the Craigmont Mine, which is where I'm at right now. Our mill is located at the Craigmont Mine site. And then we have a fully permitted silver mine called Treasure Mountain Silver Mine, which is 90 minutes from here. We have a fully permitted rock quarry, a fully permitted gravel pit, and we have a fully permitted cement plant. So, you know, everything we have is permitted, and this is going to be a great year for us.
Okay, so yes, I believe that to be true. About 20 minutes ago, we were talking, you and I want to have that conversation again. Why do you think this is going to be a great year for you guys as opposed to a lot of other different mines? Talk to me about that and really the permitting process and why it's so important to be close to permitting or having a permit in hand.
I'll answer that in steps, right? So, so first is, as an investor, which I also invest, there are two types of companies that that excite me. One is early stage exploration where you're hoping for a discovery and then, you know, your big uptake. For, you know, early production, pre-production, or in production, and essentially nothing in between, because then you get the fatigue. And the reality is that, so the ENY came out with a stat that, you know, from when the 43101 is submitted to the application for a mine permit, the global average to get that mine permit is 13.4 years. So it's a long process, and it's getting more and more expensive because your impact studies, your economic feasibility, your environmental studies, like, to put everything together, and it's been extended out. So, you know, if you do a DCF analysis and you discount it back, you really can come up with the value of NSR that is not that attractive. So, so I like to be in very early, or I like to be in late. Now, why Nicola? As I said, we have all our permits. And one thing that I hadn't mentioned when we were talking, so when I took over the role of CEO in 2013, so myself and the chairman, we put up $12 million at that time of our own capital, and we started a workout because it was in 2012. This company had a 230 million market cap. In 2013, it was 3 million. It had defaulted on its debt and it defaulted on its debt and it needed a workout. That's my background. I'm a distress turnaround specialist. So we started the workout and we acquired the land. So we own this land. And so we own essentially 1,000 acres where the mill site is. We then went to the Ministry of Mining and challenged them and said, look, we own the land, so we would like to take our mill out of the Mines Act. because under the Mines Act, and this goes under UNDRIP, like I actually studied, I did I have a certificate in Indigenous law, just because I tend to be academic, and if I don't know facts, I dig in and I start learning them. So under UNDRIP, most mining companies are present on not private land, they're on Crown land or state land or whatever. And so you have to reclimate that back to Indigenous usage of the Indigenous people of those areas. Well, when you own the land, we felt that we should be treated different. And the ministry said, well, you can't, because the Indians Act and the Mines Act are very closely associated. And so we challenged them. We kept fighting and arguing. And then finally, we received a permit that is very unique. We're the only such permit in Canada, where we are classified as a mining industrial site. So right. Now we're in a mining industrial site. So as an industrial site, we're able to do industrial activity. So now the ministry then gave us a permit that is incredibly unique, guys, where it says Nicola Mining has the right to accept and process mill feed from anywhere in the province of British Columbia, subject to notifying the Ministry of Mining 10 days ahead. The power of that wording is incredible, because that allows us to take projects that, rather than having to go through a mill permitting process, they can now ship it to us, and we're their partners. We have our own asset. We have our own Dominion, which we own 75%, but we were partners with Talisker, Osisko, Blue Lagoon. So, and it's because, you know, essentially, if I were to conceptualize it, I think of like small mining projects as airplanes, and Nicola Mining is the airport, and they come to us to monetize their gold.
Okay. So I'm going to interrupt you here. I got a bunch of questions about that, because that's very interesting. So you're permitted. My question is, I just want to make sure that I heard you correct. You're permitted, you can process, you can mill, people can ship you their stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I don't know enough about this, but I'm assuming each mill can process different materials. What can your mill process? Can it process all of the above, gold, copper, silver, blah, 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 blah? Or what do you specialize in? Or is there
all of the above?
All of the above.
So, but there's two parts. So, you know, if you look at your typical mill, a standard mill, which we have, right? So there's two types of, when you look at gold, let's pick gold as an example. So when you see drill core, you see two types of gold. One is gold in sulfides, and the other is the free gold, where you see those little specks of gold and they circulate. Well, in a flotation mill, you are not able to recover the free gold.
Okay.
You're able to recover the gold that's in the sulfides because it floats to the top, and the free gold gets shot out. So our mill, what we have is we have both systems. We start out with a gravity concentrator. So we're able to capture the free gold. And then what we don't capture in the free gold goes into the flotation process. So we can do both.
We can do both.
you know, but that said, like, does it make sense for us to mill copper? No, because copper is, so we have the highest grade copper mine in the history of North America. And we've got drill results coming out in 2-3 weeks, and we're very excited about it. And I'm confident the market will be also extremely excited. But the reality is that for a copper project, you want a bigger mill, you want a bigger process, right? Yep. So if we were to actually start milling the copper, we'd want a bigger mill. But for milling high-grade gold, high-grade silver, this is perfect.
Okay. So that was my next question, is really, I mean, how do I ask this? Are you looking, I mean, this is like a cash cow here. Are you planning on expanding the mill, or can you do that under your permit?
Well, you're entering into a very confidential section of this conversation.
Don't answer that. I get it.
I'll just leave it that I'm a step ahead of you on this.
Okay.
But the answer is yes. You know, the mill was built for expansion.
Got it.
So this mill was built for expansion. So, but the point is, you know, it does, you don't need 1,000 horsepower motor in a car unless you go to a racetrack. It makes no sense if you're driving the streets of LA or Miami, but it's a lot of fun when you go to a racetrack. So it doesn't make sense for us to have a big mill when we don't have the throughput.
Right.
This is actually the year where we've gone. So we kind of turned operating cash flow positive in 2023. 2024, our cash flows went down, our operating profit went down. So the question is, okay, why did it go down? And the reason is because we had very clear visibility of 2025, which we are in now. And what I can tell you, the mill now will be running full capacity. So we wanted to get all the upgrades. So we have a mill like where guys can run it. Our chemical balances can run from a phone. We fully automated, and the automation allowed us to go from 8 people running the ball mill or the mill to 4. Now, the purpose of this isn't about cutting employees to increase profitability. It's the fact that when you fully automate something, there's no errors. It's perfect. It runs in perfect continuity. So what it does is it increases the recovery. So now we're going to be able to have, augmented recovery, augmented profitability, and the mill is going to be operating at full capacity. So once you get to the full capacity, that's when you want to increase the motor to the next level.
Got it. Okay. So cash flow, cash cow mill right here. Let's talk about the project then, or the projects as far as the mining projects. What do you have? Tell us first about, tell us what you have and what's coming out that you can tell us.
So, the exciting thing here, like the upside that is really, really exciting, is the copper asset. And it's kind of hard to, like, one of the things, because as you guys know, like I came from the buy side. So, I came from the buy side and, in private equity or when I was at Goldman, and people would always be bringing deals in, and I'm by nature a skeptic. And so when you go to these mining conferences, and I'm sure you've attended them, I'll tell you an interesting story. So my son, is just graduating from Columbia Business School and works at UBS in M&A banking. And I said, and he had some time off. So I said, hey, during your 4 days off, why don't you come to the mining conference in Toronto and tell me what you think? And he sat there and he said, man, it's all the same story. Like, he said, you could basically swap the commodity and the story makes sense. You could swap gold with copper or cobalt or zinc or lithium. And it's like, we're adjacent to this property. We bought this property via earn-in from this group before who spent $20 million. And they had it from another group who spent, so there's a lot of work done on the property. Eric Sprott's an investor. And here's Eric Sprott's an investor in a lot of companies, like the name, right? So with this here, with our project, and the reason why I say I'm skeptical is when people say to me, we took it over from the group before and they had it from a group before, I'm like, okay, what, are you that brilliant that everybody else is not, is that stupid that they can't unlock the value? Like, what is the real trigger here? And our copper asset is a real trigger. So the copper was discovered in the 1800s. It was the mine, as we call it, the historic mine, was discovered in the 40s. From 1961 to 81, it operated. It's the highest grade major copper mine in North American history. The last exploration drill hole was done in 1961 when the mine started. And then they had so after the mine closed in 81, and they left $500 million of copper in situ, they just closed because copper hit 60 cents a pound. So it didn't make sense to deplete. Management then did an MBO or a management buyout and bought the assets from Placer Dome. And they then, because the copper runs with about 15 to 30% magnetite. So there was a lot of value in the historic tailings where they just took, you know, magnetic trommels and they scraped off the magnetite and sold it to the coal industry in the United States. So they made, you know, they sold hundreds of million dollars at that. So then we acquired their ownership in 2015. In 2015 of November, we announced that we had 100% of the Craigmont Copper Project. 1 month later, a principal geologist of Teck Resources called me and said, and who's still on our board, Paul Johnson, said, how were you able to consolidate this? This is one of the top projects in the world. And I was like very excited. I said, why is it that big? And he said, no, it's because you know there's copper there and you're permitted. This is a permitted copper site. So this isn't about going through 15, 20 years of applications and that. Find the copper and you can mine it. And so it's a very different story. And so, and the fact that there was zero exploration up until we took over, and our very first drill hole was 85 meters of 1.1% copper. So it's pretty significant grades here. And so we drilled, coming up what I can talk about. So our drill results, so we were looking for a porphyry. We looked at two zones this year. The one zone, the Marb Kaz zone, we only drilled very shallow for a very specific purpose. For next year, we want to go deeper because now we have better idea. And then we drilled in between there and the embayment, and very, very high grade intercepts. So that's the copper asset. The mill is its own. And when you say cash cow, it is. It's a cash cow. The silver asset we put into care and maintenance. We're getting a lot of interest in the silver now. We put it in care and maintenance in 2013 because in 2013 silver was $14.68 an ounce. The Canadian dollar was $1.05 to the U.S. Now silver's comfortably, you know, between 26 to 32, let's say.
Yeah.
And the Canadian dollar is like monopoly money to Americans now. So
right.
This is a time to kind of look at reviewing what we're going to do with our copper asset. And we just got a 10-year mine extension. So that's great. And then, you know, and again, our gravel pit rock, right? That's just, it just feeds into our cash.
Yeah.
Which is focused on the mill. We recently acquired 75% of Dominion Gold. We applied for the bulk sample permit. We got that. We got a conditional permit. So now we paid the reclamation bond. So now we are looking at starting that up this year. That it all comes into the same pool.
Got it. Okay. So the question I have then is with the copper mine, the copper project.
Sure.
Since you are permitted, correct?
Yeah.
So what's an ETA in production?
I can't answer that because first, I mean, I mentioned earlier, like there are two types of deals that I like.
Mm-hmm.
One is sure. The early stage discovery and the other is the production. Well, this is almost kind of both, but
right.
I like to think of it that, you know, we are on the verge of that discovery. I'm not saying we're there yet. Mm-hmm. Like we had some very good grades, but the real thing is to find the elephant, and we're getting close to that elephant. And I would say what's different about this, our copper asset, is that you don't just have retail or investors, you have strategic people with a lot of interest that we have, because there's very few copper projects in North America where once you prove the concept, you can start working towards the mine, and you still have to put a mine plant together, right? So, but you can start working on that mine. So if you look at the net present value of that project, depending on how much copper, and you know, you'll see our drill results are very good, but we're looking for that big porphyry that we're going to work on this year.
Yeah, I guess what I'd try to communicate to you, I totally get it. And confusing is the wrong word. It's unique.
Yeah.
It's very unique because you're permitted. You could build a mine tomorrow, correct me if I'm wrong, but why do that when you're trying to get, like you said, your elephant hunting is what you're doing.
I love Peter's analogies. I'm getting a kick out of the elephant analogies and the turkey, eagles and the typhoon, saying stuff like that. But
Stephen analogies,
you know, I love it. But you know, it's a unique. You have a unique mind, but I want to kind of shift gears a little bit and ask about your unique experience and background. I was intrigued about not only your mining experience, but you said you were a distressed turnaround specialist, and you've got a lot of experience with capital markets. And I just wanted to know kind of how your background kind of maybe might set Nikola apart in terms of raising money, in terms of navigating 2025 and beyond.
Okay, so that's it's a great question, a great thought. I'll say this, I'll correct you on one thing. So and apologies because I'm going to
swear. Can I interrupt you? Because I don't think he needs to raise money.
Yeah, but we're talking about background now, right? So And forgive me for saying one swear word, okay? But
forgiven.
So you said, like, I know a lot about capital markets. So my background when I, you know, at Goldman and in my career was debt, distressed debt, turnaround. So people would ask me when I was, you know, a GS banker, they'd be like, hey, Peter, wow, you're at Goldman. Like, what's a good stock to invest in? And I would say, you know what? I don't know good companies. I only know shitty ones. Because right. That's all I did. But what I would say I really understand is risk. And I really know how to quantify that well. So, you know, so in my previous career, and I was one of the pioneers of SPACs, right? I did two of the largest SPACs in history. Back in 2005, 2000, or 2006 and 2007, and was part of the largest IPO in the world in 2008. So I do have some capital market experience with the IPOs, but again, my strength is the bottom side of the balance sheet, the debt. And one of the things that I also hold very clear to me. And we talked about this offline, but I'll bring it up again. But as you know, and I'm sure both of you, like Andy, Steve, you get this, where you have a high school friend, and they'll say, "Hey, Andy, what's a good company to invest in?" And if you tell them what to invest in, and they make money, the next time they're like, "Hey, that was great. What's another one?" And so you find that relationship becomes more and more transactional. And I learned that early in my career. And I learned it because, you know, I introduced somebody to and when you introduce them, like Steve, let's say, not picking on you, Steve, but, you know, let's say you tell your friend, here's a good company, and your friend invests and they lose money.
Yeah.
Every time they call you, they're like, "Hey, Steve, how you doing? But you know where this is going." It's like, yeah, the stock's down like 40%. Like, when's news coming to get it up, right? And it's like, gosh, man, like, you see it on your dial, and it's like, oh, here we go again, you know. And so one of the things that we did with Nikola and talking about not having to raise money is when I took over the role of CEO and our chairman Frank Hoigle, we put up $12 million of our own money. And for the first 7 years, we put up 70% of the capital, the insiders. We didn't go to the market to raise money because, and this is quite different than brokers, like a lot, you know, the typical broker, now CEO, is that I don't like asking for people for money if I don't know 100% I can succeed. Because that's where, for the rest of their life, every time they call you, it's going to be like, "Oh yeah, hey, remember that time I lost like 70% of my net worth?" It's like, so there's actually no upside to introducing friends to good deals. And there's less upside to introducing them to bad ones. Yeah. So because this was a distressed, it was a distressed turnaround. So we said, okay, we'll put up the money because if I lose my money, and you know, it's one of those things in you hear this in business a lot, where people are like, you just jump in, roll up your sleeve, get your hands dirty and get at it. Well, that's not how distress turnaround. People who do that in distress turnaround fail. What you do is you have your sleeves up, you sit down, you start analyzing what are the strengths, what are the weaknesses, what are the key assets, who are the key people, who are the cancers, how do we fix this? And then you start executing systematically. So we spent, you know, before we did anything, we spent a year really understanding the landscape, really understanding what our assets were to get to the point. So now where we are, we took the company, we spent a lot of time focusing on cash flow because I don't like having to raise capital. I don't like going to the market and saying, by the way, you know, this is the best copper project in the world and here's why. And we have this great mill and here's how we're going to make a lot of money in the share price. That's not my style. Like I come from a debt background. So I'm very rooted in the way I explain things. And I've had people criticize me for that, where they're like, you know, you gotta like give them more upside. Like don't talk about that. And I'm like, well, I need to be honest. I need to tell them what the risks are. And now we're finally at a point where, you know, this is now, and we started this a year ago where, and I, you know, there's a saying, a Japanese saying, again, a different saying, but the saying is the wise eagle hides its claws. So you don't talk about what you have or what potential you can grab until you have that fully secured and can say, here's what I have. And so that's where we are now. Now we're like, we've de-risked it. The cash flow is coming in. We expect our cash flow to go up, you know, eightfold from last year to, you know, somewhere between 8 to 12-fold, and our profitability to go up. And, you know, so we're at a really, really good position to actually start talking the story and, you know, going from a debt to more of the upside, exciting upside story.
Well, I don't know how to follow any of that. I think that is so well said. And it reminds me a lot of like, and just for all of our viewers and listeners that are going to listen to this, this is just me talking. It sounds like something a Warren Buffett would launch. Is a undervalued asset that is cash flowing.
So, well, and I, you know, I saw today, like, so do you know the podcast All In?
Yes. Yes.
So today's All In podcast was with Ray Dalio.
Really?
And I'm a big fan of Ray Dalio, right? And he's quite brilliant.
Yes.
And so they asked Ray Dalio, hey, what do you invest in though? Like AI, you know, and you know, the one thing like an AI, you hear this in mining a lot where I get calls all the time. People are like, we got a new AI technology. And I'll look at it and I'll go like, it's not AI. That's just, you know, quick analytical capabilities of a databases.
Right.
That's AI is like artificial learning, right? And I said, what you're doing is great. It's new, but don't use the word AI. And people just use it. But the way, you know, AI is developing so quickly that right now you can hit a point where you can raise money for an AI project. And by the time you start executing on that project, it's already obsolete because AI's gone ahead of it. So, but Ray Dalio said, yeah, you know, we're not into AI. You know, very simple guy. Commodities. I like gold. I like Bitcoin. And they said, what about mining? It's like, I like mining. We need commodities, you know? So that was today. And that's Ray Dalio speaking.
Yeah.
You know, basically understanding the importance of mining, understanding the importance of hard assets against the US dollar, which has, you know, 7% of the, you know, the all taxes right now are basically allocated towards paying interest on the, you know, $4 trillion debt that you guys fortunately have been given. So it's these hard assets that really will give not just manufacturing rally, because this is why I do think mining this year and over the next few years is actually better than manufacturing, is because the manufacturing side goes into pure dollar trade. So as, and whether it be yen, Canadian dollar, euro, you know, yuan, you're talking about paper money to acquire goods, and that those, the paper money, as these governments print more money, is going to be devalued. The one thing that will hold is a finite and decreasing amount of precious metals or base metals. That's the most stable thing. And, you know, and Bitcoin, I mean, Bitcoin, whether you believe it or not, it's a finite value that, that can be a great, hedge against, you know, inflation, US dollar decreasing in value, the yen decreasing in value. So we're at this stage where if you can actually produce something, you're going to reap the benefits of this, this cycle here. But if you're, you know, if you're in the process of applying for permits, you're going to miss the bandwagon.
Yeah, 100% agree. Steve, did you have anything to add?
No, I did want to ask how, first of all, I'm impressed, Peter, you're on site. We love your enthusiasm. Enjoy talking to you, but want to see if our listeners can find you some way if they're interested in investing or want to learn about more about the company. How do they find you? What's your website? And if you can share your tickers.
So our Canadian ticker is, so if you go to the website, so the website is nikolamining.com. And, you know, we're listed on the Frankfurt, we're listed on the TSX. Our Canadian ticker is NIM. And our American ticker is HUSIF.
On the OTC market.
Yeah. Yep. And, but if you go to the website, nikolamining.com, there's a contact, there's an info, and, you know, you can, feel free to ask any question there. And, you know, look, we're straight shooters. So, you know, we love the company, but we'll also give you our honest, thoughts.
Yeah. I think we'll end on that. Peter, this was one of the most interesting conversations I've had in a while, and I've had a lot of them, Steve would attest. So I want to thank you for that. I'll put everything that you just said in our show notes on both the YouTube channel, as well as on the Apple Podcasts and Spotify Podcasts.
Peter, enjoyed us.
Thank you so much.